The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
All right, so 1988, second segment of Curry and Claypo. By the way, you can podcast these. Go to Tony Curry Radio Podcast. It's Curry with the KTKR Podcast. We're on Audio Boom and every major industry. You can listen to these, and we do shorter segments, so you can listen to them wherever you're at. South Trust Bank, remember that? South Trust Bank became some other bank, and then it became Wells Fargo.
Yeah.
There was a South Trust Bank down at the bottom of the hill from the radio station.
Oh, yes, I know this story, but I didn't know
that. And
so this is a great Tony Curry story.
I walk in the bank down there in 1989. I remember it, I had two $300 checks in my hand. Mm-hmm. And I was making about 28 grand a year, and of course, that was a lot of money.
That is good.
$600, that was weekend money, right? So I had the checks in my hand. I walk in, and I see everybody in the bank with their hands up. And I'm not making the correlation of what's going on. I think they're doing some type of...
Like
a drill.
Oh.
And all of a sudden, I feel on the side of my head.
Oh, I didn't know this.
And I'm going... And of course, I just
yeah.
I didn't even put my hands up. I just kind of went like this, and I didn't move. And the guy said, "Don't move." And I was like, and then at that point, it set in that this was not a drill. Or if it was a damn good drill.
Yeah.
Another guy behind the tellers, the bank's being robbed. So he's back behind the teller thing, and you know, it's really, really quiet, very uncomfortable, obviously. And then he starts to shoot. He couldn't get into the teller door and just started shooting. And the bullets ricocheting off the ceiling. Shot about 6 times. And, of course, that super loud, if you've never heard a gun go off, and a lot of us haven't, believe it or not. And it was super loud. It was like, and you're just frozen. I mean, these movies where some hero comes running into the room and saves the day. You're like, you can't even move. I was paralyzed. And all I could think about was, man, please don't take my $600. I was like,
because you weren't married.
Don't take my $600. Probably like I'd be now. please don't take my $600. And so they grab their money. They run out the front door. And for about 2 hours, I had a little imprint on the side of my temple.
Because he was holding it that hard.
Against my head. I was the only one in the bank. Because the guy who came in right before me saw what was going on and walked back out.
Oh, you were the only customer.
The guy behind the teller who ended up shooting said, the next MF that walks in here, he's dead meat. And I was that guy. And so everyone walked up to me and said, are you okay? And I said, yeah, I'm all right. You know, once they left, it was like, they locked the doors and called the police. I didn't realize how close I was.
When
the guy started shooting...
Yeah.
When someone has a gun, it's one thing.
Right.
You know, the whole gun in the pocket.
Yeah.
You know.
Right.
This whole thing.
Right.
You know,
but when they're shooting, it's a whole.
But when they actually are willing to shoot and pull the trigger,
yep.
Then you know it's taking it to another level. And I believe, and I was trying to look at some of the penal laws on the way over here. If you rob someplace and don't shoot, it's one thing. But when you discharge your weapon, it takes the charge up to a whole
regardless of whether you're shooting at somebody or not. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
And so I remember that day, and I was in the witness protection program for a period of time. Every time these guys went to court, I had to be within 15 minutes of the courthouse. I never had to appear. These knuckleheads went up to the Motel 6 right behind the bank in a room. Of course, the bag goes off, the ink goes in their face, and they get popped. Like, within 15 minutes, they were dumbasses. They were on a motorcycle. They were on a mini bike. Not real smart. So, my point being is this. Do you own a gun?
Mm-mm.
Okay. I own a gun. It was given to me as a gift.
I've thought about it, but I don't.
And it's a Ruger, and I have shot it. I said, if I'm going to own it, I should know how it works.
Oh, yeah,
it's
yeah.
my responsibility to Absolutely. Know how a gun works. I know some people who own firearms just feel better having one. A lot of people, when they buy a house or something expensive, they feel better about having a firearm. Regardless of whether they shoot it, it can stay in the case in their safe for 20 years. They can never use it, but the fact they have one makes them feel a little bit more protected.
Sure,
around their environment. You understand that from a psychological standpoint?
Yes, I do. Absolutely.
I don't sleep with it under my bed. I don't travel with it. I don't have it in my car. I try to stay away from certain situations where I feel like I need it. Now, if I was sent to Mexico City, a country or a part of this country that is deemed somewhat dangerous,
yes,
and I had to be there for business or anything else, I may consider it, but I still wouldn't feel comfortable because having it means I better be able to use it, and I better be willing to make
those. There you go.
So,
and these events are a great example.
Exactly.
Of that. Yes.
So, what my point is, and you can have your guns on. I'm not going to go there. But the more you use it, or the more comfortable you feel with it, the more it becomes part of your everyday. I have several friends of mine that own properties here in Birmingham, mm-hmm, that aren't in very good neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. They get sent over, someone will call, my air conditioner's not working at 2:00 in the morning. They have to go in this area neighborhood, they don't feel, and they take their gun. And I get that. I also have another very good friend of mine who just lost his brother several months ago. I had a bullet come through his living room the other night. He calls me up because I got to tell you this crazy story. And I'm like, dude, it's, of course, he's got guns and he's willing to protect, you know, his humble abode and his family. With that, but he's like, I hope it. But he feels very comfortable. He gets the point now where, well, every time I walk outside my house, I carry my pistol with me, and I'm thinking to myself, man,
see, that's...
I mean, if you're living in an area of town where you feel like, and I understand this is normal for a lot of people.
Yeah, I know.
But when you feel like you can't leave your house without having a sidearm.
Right. Oh, that's right.
There's something wrong.
Well,
I understand a lot of people are in that situation. If
yes.
You do you, that's fine. So these three instances, and now the fourth,
yeah,
where a guy is sitting, an 84-year-old
right.
man is sitting
That's
on the deck
class.
Of his house and shoots two people who pull into his driveway.
Right.
I think psychologically, why?
Right.
Because if someone pulled my driveway, and even if I, and that looked like a pretty nice area of town, it's a nice mm-hmm. house he lived in.
Yep.
First of all, what the hell you got in your house you need to protect? No. What the hell are you doing?
Right.
You know, if you got a beware of dog sign or no trespassing, I always think there's something kind of weird going on behind
right.
the gate here.
Right.
Or you're just a really private person, you probably got bigger issues anyway. But what would make an 84-year-old man shoot at people that are at the bottom of his driveway
yeah.
that are not endangering his life or threatening him in any particular
well, you know,
way?
I
understand if someone would get... in your car, the wrong car. I kind of get that.
Sure.
Because if you're sitting in a Walmart parking lot and all of a sudden someone slides in your car, you're
yeah.
probably getting robbed.
But these were cases
I understand.
The bottom of the driveway, knocked on the door.
And I kind of get someone ringing the doorbell because if you live in a really bad neighborhood, but this wasn't a bad neighborhood.
No, but that's the thing. That's the thing. Even if you live in a really bad neighborhood, there's a difference between someone entering your house.
Yeah.
Right. And there's all these steps. There's a difference between someone entering your house and someone ringing the doorbell. So you shot somebody who rung the doorbell in the case of this young man who was at the wrong house. Like, again, this is the part, you know, we talk about responsible gun ownership, A, and then we talk about the whole idea of, you know, sort of perceived threat. And this is why...
I don't know if this guy was robbed the night before.
But
I don't know.
No, but even if you were,
a thief would not ring the doorbell.
But even if you were, why are you discharging your firearm with somebody's at the bottom of your hill, somebody's knocked on your door, discharging your firearm, shooting somebody?
And I know people always say shoot to kill. I can't be that guy.
Yeah.
I can't help but think that if I had point blank range, I wouldn't shoot someone in the kneecap first.
Right.
But I mean, why not just shoot it in the air? That would scare the hell out of any teenager. They'd be running. You don't
this
have to
whole
shoot
thing
at
is,
them.
I mean, it's a mess because there are, just go all the way back to what we were saying in an earlier segment. The same way that there are people who cannot responsibly drink, cannot smoke dope responsibly, cannot eat responsibly. They either don't have the training, I think in so many cases, and or the experience, and you can talk to law enforcement about this, to use their firearm in a way that is responsible. These are not responsible acts. It's also not a statement. It goes back to what I was saying before. It doesn't mean that everybody who's a firearm owner is exactly the same way. The difference is, again, like something like drunk driving,
mm-hmm.
these are situations where you blow it with a lethal weapon and somebody's life is potentially taken out.
Yeah.
You know, you smoke dope and you don't get behind the wheel and you sit in your house, fine.
Yeah.
Fine. I mean, alcohol, maybe you can have alcohol poisoning and there's binge drinking, but that's the problem with this is, and we live in a country where we are not going to take away these things. We're not going to take away these things. The other thing I think is interesting about it is if you look at the research, the survey research about gun ownership and sort of the certification and background checks and all that kind of stuff, what's really interesting is the way that we twist this. The research itself, when they survey people, the vast majority of gun owners have no problem with certification, background checks, delay before you can get it. I mean, again, just I'm talking about the numbers.
And they're responsible gun owners.
But that's what I'm saying.
I know a lot of people that are very responsible.
But that's what I'm saying. If you look at the numbers of people surveyed, and yet we have this, like, again, whether it's the lobbyists or whether it's, you know, whatever, there is this sense that people who own guns don't want any of those things.
Yeah.
That it infringes on their rights. But yet the numbers are exactly opposite. And they said that, yeah, people responsible gun owners don't have a problem with, and here's the thing that's so interesting to me. Why would you have a problem? This is the classic thing to me. Why would you have a problem of you gotta get a driver's license, you gotta have health insurance. Why would you have a problem if somebody said, you know what, we're gonna do a background check, number one. Number two, we're gonna require you to show some sort of training in it. And forget red flag laws. I mean, I won't even get into the red flag. That's it.
Yeah.
Why is that bad?
Yeah, well, you don't even need a license.
You don't need anything.
And I mean, a lot of people say you don't want to give the government any more information than they need, which I understand. The thing about it is
we do it with cars.
We have more guns here in this country than we have human beings.
Yes.
And
that's going to be the problem no matter what.
We do have a problem here. And I mean, I'm not telling you anything you don't already know. This is the worst country in the world when it comes to gun violence. We've got a problem. We've got a major issue. This is our problem. We have to figure it out. No other country deals with the type of gun violence we have here.
I love that you're saying that because so often we say, in our country, it's not that. Yeah, we're the worst.
I'm starting to think that we're getting into the Cold War of gun ownership, and that is to say, well, they're building a nuclear weapon, so we need to build a nuclear weapon.
We are.
And so if he's got a gun, I better have
one. Well, it's the bad guys.
If you've got one, I better
have
one.
Exactly.
And so,
the good guys with the gun.
Yeah. I don't know what the answer is. I really don't. And our thoughts and prayers go out to the people in Dayville. That thing kind of flew under the radar.
Oh, the Dayville one.
It wasn't a school shooting. It was a Sweet 16 party. The candles weren't blown out, and the cake wasn't cut. And I'm just like, and these two knuckleheads, these two brothers that pulled this off, I mean, what, 28, 29 people got injured. I mean, there was bullets flying all over the place at a Sweet 16 party. What the hell are we doing?
We're not even covering it. Just to give you a sense, and then we'll go light. When all these things, I mean, and so many of them have happened. I mean, they're just going. Nashville, Louisville, these three here in Alabama. Yep. You know, I always check in with our local TV station. Look, do you want me to come on and say anything about it? And literally, they're like, I mean, it wasn't that they don't care, but they're like, people aren't that interested anymore.
There's no new angle.
Right?
There's no new angle. Well,
that's
hopefully
right.
We gave you an angle just because the last three shootings, and it was top of every newscast last night, the three, and people can sort of say, well, hell, there's been 15 shootings in Birmingham last week. We don't talk about that. Well, maybe we should, but there's not enough news time for it. All right, that's our second segment here, Curry and Claypool. I had a Lila Jane question of the day. It was on the way to school this morning. My daughter, and I didn't even ask her. She asked me this question. I was like, oh, here we go. I said, this is going to be great. I said, can I use that? I'm like, I had to do some inventory, man. I had some resentments on my
own. With the homeowner? With the
woman, women working.
Yeah, no, I know, yeah.
Did I scare you?
Yeah, I didn't know if you were being provocative or honest.
Are we?
They better give us more than 3 minutes.
So we're going to get into women who are working a lot more.
No, who are working what we call egalitarian. So they make the same amount as their husbands.
Okay, I don't think the money.
It totally does. Well, yes, it does.
Well, it shouldn't.
No, but does. Because there's a difference between, or they're working the same amount.
But they're still expected to be the homemaker.
No, they're not. Well, there's. We got to go on the angles. It depends what we say who's expecting.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I'm going to go off on this shit.
We're not going to have enough time. I know. It should be essential. Right. Okay, we're back in 30 seconds right now.
Let me take a breath.
Yeah, let's do it.
Whew.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.